Well, hello, and welcome to our first go at chapter 13 in book 2 of The Life Divine. This is entitled Exclusive Concentration of Consciousness Force and the Ignorance. This is a reconstituted, revised chapter that was actually published under the title Exclusive Concentration of Tapas on the 15th of March in 1918 in the Arya. In that issue, there was no citation. The chapter just began. As he revised it, he has brought in a citation from the Rig Veda. This is the next to the last hymn in the Rig Veda, and it's a hymn to creation. In English, he has translated it like this. From the kindled fire of energy of consciousness, tapas, truth, satyam, was born, and the law of truth, ritam. From that, the night. From the night, the flowing ocean of being, samudra. So this idea that there is a concentration of consciousness. This energy of consciousness is tapas. And through its self-concentration on its own being, truth is what emerges. But also that faculty which orders truth, which brings it into an expressive harmonic immensity, which we can call a typic universe above. From that, from this first manifestation, the night, from the night, the flowing ocean of being. So you can see this is very rich, deep mysticism that's present in the articulation of this mantra from the Veda. So the title, Exclusive Concentration of Consciousness Force and the Ignorance. Exclusive. Not in the sense of being a very discriminating restaurant that we would go to, but the idea that this is going back to the Latin derivation, ex claudere, to shut out. It is a consciousness that shuts out to be able to achieve the goal of its concentration. And concentration, from again Latin, concentrum, to bring to a point, to bring to a point in the center. So you can see it is this massive concentration down to a point. So a concentration that excludes and focuses. What has this to do with the ignorance? So he begins now. Since Brahman is in the essentiality of its universal being, a unity and a multiplicity, aware of each other and in each other. And since in its reality it is something beyond the one and the many, containing both, aware of both, ignorance can only come about as a subordinate phenomenon by some concentration of consciousness absorbed in a part knowledge or a part action of the being and excluding the rest from its awareness. And there's a fine summary statement of the whole chapter, isn't it? Brahman is that term for the essential reality of the divine. In its essence, it is both a unity and a multiplicity. The multiplicity arises within the unity, but Brahman cannot be equated entirely with either. Both exist within it, but it exceeds and transcends both the one and the many. But ignorance does not have a standing within that reality, except as a subordinate phenomenon. It is derived from the concentration of consciousness. It has no ontological status of its own. So he continues then. There may be either a concentration of the one in itself to the exclusion of the many, or of the many in their own action to the exclusion of the all-awareness of the one, or of the individual being in himself to the exclusion both of the one and the rest of the many, who are then to him separated units not included in his direct awareness. So these are all acts of a consciousness that wishes to exclude, to shut out, to push away for a particular reason. In the first, it is so that the one can dwell within itself without reference to one in many. The second, the individual is concentrating on his own being, excluding the one from which he is drawn, and excluding the many, the all around. So he continues, or again, there may be, or there may intervene at a certain point, some general rule of exclusive concentration, operative in all these three directions, a concentration of separative active consciousness and a separative movement. But this takes place not in the true self, but in the force of active being, in Prakriti. So there's never any real division of the self from the one. What apparent division occurs is always within the field of nature, not within the field of the self. We can concentrate our consciousness and become aware of only a certain part or aspect of our being, exclude that from which we come, exclude the universe around us, but still we are deeply connected to the all and to that from which all comes, to that origin. But that is in ourself. In the active, practical part of our nature, we live as if divided, as if excluding or being excluded. This hypothesis we adopt in preference to the others, because none of the others taken by itself will hold or will square with all the facts of existence. Integral Brahman cannot be in its integrality the source of the ignorance, because its integrality is in its very nature all consciousness. And again, integral, from the term integer, which means that which cannot be touched, cannot be divided, in other words. So integral would mean entire or whole. So the integral Brahman cannot lose its integrality. The one cannot, in its integral conscious being, exclude the many from itself, because the many would not then at all exist. At most, it can stand back somewhere in its consciousness from the cosmic play so as to enable a similar movement in the individual being. The many in the integrality, or in each self of the many, cannot be really ignorant of the one or of others, because by the many we mean the same divine self in all, individualized indeed, but still one in conscious being with all in a single universality, and one too with the original and transcendent being. So this is the true nature of the many, of the manifestation. Ignorance is therefore not the natural character of the consciousness of the soul, even of the individual soul. It is the outcome of some particularizing action in the executive conscious force when it is absorbed in its works and forgetful of self and the total reality of the nature. So here, as if we are compartmentalizing our being, we can't be other than that because we are in reality Sat. But in the play of our consciousness force, we can stand back in practical terms from the identity of it to enable the play. And therefore, that part on the front, the tippy top of the nature, can miss what is going on in the depths and live and dwell and manifest according to the laws of the surface, not according to the laws of the depths. But the essence of being can never be abrogated by that which is manifest from it. The singleness of being and its essence cannot be broken apart. This action, he writes, cannot be that of the whole being or of the whole force of being, for the character of that completeness is whole consciousness and not partial consciousness. It must be a superficial or partial movement absorbed in a superficial or partial action of the consciousness and the energy, concentrated in its formation, oblivious of all else that is not included in the formation or not there overtly operative. Ignorance is nature's purposeful oblivion of the self and the all, leaving them aside, putting them behind herself in order to do solely what she has to do in some outer play of existence. So, never truly put aside, but it is an apparent oblivion. The self, the reality of the being, stands behind, and the all are left out too, as the force of the consciousness is on the apparently separated individual or the manyness aspect of the divine. In the infinity of being and its infinite awareness, concentration of consciousness, tapas, is always present as an inherent power of consciousness force. This was the conclusion of the last chapter. It is a self-held or self-gathered dwelling of the eternal awareness in itself and on itself or on its object. But the object is always in some way itself, its own being or a manifestation and movement of its being. How could it be otherwise, that being the only thing that is? The concentration may be essential. It may be even a soul indwelling or an entire absorption in the essence of its own being, a luminous or else a self-oblivious self-immersion. Or it may be integral or else a total multiple or a part multiple concentration. Or it may be a single separative regard on one field of its being or movement, a single pointed concentration in one center, or an absorption in one objective form of its self-existence. The first, the essential, is at one end, the superconscient silence, and at the other end, the inconscience. The second, the integral, is the total consciousness of Satchit Ananda, the supramental concentration. The third, the multiple, is the method of the totalizing or global overmental awareness. The fourth, the separative, is the characteristic nature of the ignorance. the supreme integrality of the Absolute holds all these states or powers of its consciousness together as a single indivisible being, looking at all itself in manifestation with a simultaneous self-vision. If you remember the Mandukya Upanishad that we talked about earlier, when it talked about the fourth, the Chaturtham, called in later philosophy the Turiya, the fourth. That is that thing which is beyond all the various modes and states of conscious being, the thing which actually absorbs them all, which is actually being expressed in the superconscient, in the creative consciousness of the divine, and in the extant, magnificent universe that we walk around in. This is reminiscent of that idea. So, essential, integral, multiple, separative. These are those four states of concentration. Concentration, he writes, in this sense of self-held dwelling in itself, or on itself as object, may be said then to belong to the very nature of conscious being. So here he's describing the power that dwells within chit as an expression of true reality. Sat chit. This is a law of true being that dwells inside consciousness force. It can always concentrate itself. Concentrate itself into an essence, into this integral totalizing consciousness, into a separative awareness, into a multiple awareness. All of these states can be achieved and can be achieved at once in the total consciousness of the divine. It's in the power of chit to do this. Although there may seem to be a dispersion, that means to say a scattering of its energies, that is in reality a form of distribution, which is an apportioning among several, a dividing up of substance among several. So not a dispersion where it's simply scattered, akin to being chaotic or random, but a distribution, which means deliberately divided and passed out. It's an apportioning. So the energies of conscious force are distributed, not random, they are willful, and is only possible in a superficial field because it is supported by an underlying self-held concentration. The concentration always occurs within the reality of that single being, which is who is conscious of itself. An exclusive concentration on or in a single subject or object or domain of being or movement is not a denial or departure from the spirit's awareness. It is one form of the self-gathering of the power of tapas. But when the concentration is exclusive, it brings about a holding back behind it of the rest of self-knowledge. It may be aware of the rest all the time, yet act as if it were not aware of it. That would not be a state or act of ignorance. But if the consciousness erects by the concentration a wall of exclusion, limiting itself to a single field, domain, or habitation in the movement, so that it is aware only of that or aware of all the rest as outside itself, then we have a principle of self-limiting knowledge which can result in a separative knowledge and culminate in a positive and effective ignorance. So this wall of exclusion that is self-built by the consciousness is what can lead to an eventual ignorance. When we fully lose contact with the rest of our universal or essential being. we can get some glimpse of what this means, to what it amounts in action, when we look at the nature of exclusive concentration in mental man, in our own consciousness. First of all, we must note that what we mean ordinarily by the man is not his inner self, but only a sum of apparent continuous movement of consciousness and energy in past, present, and future, to which we give this name. It is this that in appearance does all the works of the man, thinks all his thoughts, feels all his emotions. This energy is a movement of consciousness force, concentrated on a temporal stream of inward and outward workings. But we know that behind this stream of energy, there is a whole sea of consciousness which is aware of the stream, but of which the stream is unaware. For this sum of surface energy is a selection, an outcome from all the rest that is invisible. That sea is the subliminal self, the superconscient, the subconscient, the intraconscient, and circumconscient being, and holding it all together, the soul, the psychic being. The stream is the natural, the superficial man. So this is a description of the totality of our conscious being. We think of ourselves as being separate, but really we are a stream leading from that ocean. We share that oceanic being. And in the definition of that stream, there is the subliminal, that self, which is behind the apparent, the superficial. There is that part of that being which is superconscient, above what we are normally conscious of, but a greater consciousness. That is part of our being of which we are unaware. Then the subconscient, that which is below our normal field of awareness, that too is part of our state of reality. Then the intraconscient, that refers to that field of which we are conscious, all that arises within what normally fills our awareness. And finally, the circumconscient being, that which surrounds us, in a sense, connects us to the universe, which enspheres us in a way. But central to it all, and what gives definition to the idea of the self, is the psychic being, the soul, which is that point of real centration which holds all of this together. That stream, which seems to be separate, that's the natural, he says, the superficial man. We ought not to become so identified with the stream that we lose contact with these other parts and aspects of our larger being, those things which connect us to the whole. In this superficial man, tapas, the being's dynamic force of consciousness, is concentrated on the surface in a certain mass of superficial workings. All the rest of itself it has put behind and may be vaguely aware of it there in the unformulated back of its conscious existence, but is not aware of it in this superficial absorbed movement in front. It is not, precisely at any rate in that back or in the depths, ignorant of itself in any essential sense of the word, but for the purposes of its superficial movement, and within that movement only, it is oblivious of its real, its greater self, by absorption, by exclusive concentration on what it is superficially doing. And this is a definition as to why we have lost knowledge of who and what we are. We have come missioned from that, bam, slam into the earth, don't reawaken quickly to what it is that we ought to be doing, or to a sense of what we are in our depths, and wander about in the vagaries of the ego as a constructed shell of individuality moving within this moving universe. A small universe moving in a larger universe, but unknowing what is the reality of both, both of self and of that. But in truth, we have never really lost it, but by exclusively identifying ourselves with this shell, with this formation on the front, there we make the error that winds up in this sense of separation. So let me reread. Yet it is really the hidden sea and not the superficial stream which is doing all the action. It is the sea that is the source of this movement, not the conscious wave it throws up. Whatever the consciousness of the wave, absorbed in its movement, living in that, seeing nothing else but that, may think about the matter. And that sea, the real self, the integral conscious being, the integral force of being, is not ignorant. Even the wave is not essentially ignorant, for it contains within itself all the consciousness it has forgotten, but for that it could not act or endure at all. But it is self-oblivious, absorbed in its own movement, too absorbed to note anything else than the movement while that continues to preoccupy. A limited practical self-oblivion, not an essential and binding self-ignorance, is the nature of this exclusive concentration, which is yet the root of that which works as the ignorance. So too we see that man, though a really indivisible stream of tapas, of conscious energy in time, capable of acting in the present only by the sum of his past force of working, creating already his future by his past and his present action, yet lives absorbed in the present moment, lives from moment to moment, and is, therefore, in this superficial action of consciousness, ignorant of his future and ignorant of his past, except for that small part of it which at any moment he may recall to him by memory. He does not, however, live in the past. What he recalls is not the past itself, but only the ghost of it, a conceptual shadow of a reality which is now to him dead, non-existent, no longer in being. But all this is an action of the superficial ignorance. The true consciousness within is not unaware of its past. It holds it there, not necessarily in memory, but in being, still active, living, ready with its fruits, and sends it up from time to time in memory, or more concretely, in result of past action or past causes to the superficial conscious being. That is indeed the true rationale of what is called karma. It is, or can be aware, too, of the future. For there is somewhere in the inner being a field of cognition open to future knowledge, a prospective as well as a retrospective time sense, time vision, time perception. Something in it lives indivisibly in the three times and contains all their apparent divisions, holds the future ready for manifestation within it. Here then, in this habit of living in the present, we have a second absorption, a second exclusive concentration, which complicates and farther limits the being, but simplifies the apparent course of the action by relating it not to the whole infinite course of time, but to a definite succession of moments. So this he has described in terms of the play of time, what it is that is delivered to us through the machinery of karma, and how it is that it leads us to sequential steps which allow us to integrate and grow back to our totality, but apparently through the divisibility of our experiences held in the past and leading towards a future conclusion. But always truly, we have that capacity to hold within our larger being all that is in the past, all that is in the present, all that is in the future, because there is a self in us which is transcendent yet consanguineous with eternity. It is beyond any measurement of time, but also contains all the three times, past, present, and future. Well, we should continue. Let us do one more paragraph. Therefore, in his superficial consciousness, man is to himself dynamically, practically, the man of the moment, not the man of the past, who was once but is no longer in existence, nor the man of the future who is not yet in being. It is by memory that he links himself with the one, by anticipation with the other. A continuous ego sense runs through the three times, but this is a centralizing mental construction, not an essential or an extended existence containing what was, is, and will be. The ego is not what we would define as ourself, not in any essential sense. So we're in full agreement with Advaita Vedanta and Buddhism and Jainism about the unreality and the dispensability of ego. That is not the self of which we speak. An intuition of self is behind it, but that is an underlying identity unaffected by the changes of his personality. In his surface formation of being, he is not that, but what he is at the moment. So, as defined in the manifestation, the wave on the front, we seem to be that. That seems to be us, and often we accept ourselves as being only that. But in reality, we're much more behind. We're the ocean behind the wave. Yet, all the time, this existence in the moment is not the real or the whole truth of his being, but only a practical or pragmatic truth for the purposes of the superficial movement of his life and within its limits. It is a truth, not an unreality, but a truth only in its positive part. In its negative parts, it is in ignorance, and this negative ignorance limits and often distorts even the practical truth, so that the conscious life of man proceeds according to an ignorance, a partial, a half-true, half-false knowledge, not according to the real truth of himself, of which he is oblivious. Yet because his real self is the true determinator and governs all secretly from behind, it is, after all, a knowledge behind which really determines the formed course of his experience. The superficial ignorance erects a necessary limiting outline and supplies the factors by which the outward color and turn needed for his present human life and his present moment are given to his consciousness and his action. In the same way, and for the same reason, man identifies himself solely with the name and form he wears in his present existence. He is ignorant of his past before birth, and even as of his future after death. Yet all that he forgets is contained, present, and effective in the all-retaining integral consciousness within him. So you see here there is a deep complicity even in the individuating movement at the essence of our being that uses the apparent ignorance to achieve a larger goal, even when we have lost faith in ourself. That greater self behind says, tut, tut, keep going for it. I know where we're going because I am you too, and I am experiencing this, but more in the fullness of my being. This part of myself absorbed, excluding all else in the front of my nature, is identified with the ignorance and knows not what is behind, nor what is before. So that is some encouragement, is it not, for us to practice yoga and go within and discover what larger self we are, and therein discover the all around as the same self, and then that self which is included in each and all and beyond them all. So let's turn to Savitri and close our evening with the passage taken this time from Book 1, The Book of Beginnings, Canto 5, The Yoga of the King, The Yoga of the Spirit's Freedom and Greatness. In the glow of the Spirit's room of memories, he could recover the luminous marginal notes, dotting with light the crabbed, ambiguous scroll, rescue the preamble and the saving clause of the dark agreement by which all is ruled that rises from material nature's sleep to clothe the everlasting in new shapes. He could reread now and interpret new its strange symbol letters, scattered abstruse signs, resolve its oracle and its paradox, its riddling phrases and its blindfold terms, the deep oxymoron of its truth's repliques, and recognize as a just necessity its hard conditions for the mighty work. Nature's impossible, Herculean toil, only her warlock wisecraft could enforce. Its law of the opposition of the gods, its list of inseparable contraries. The dumb great mother in her cosmic trance, exploiting for creation's joy and pain, infinity's sanction to the birth of form, accepts indomitably to execute the will to know in an inconscient world, the will to live under a reign of death, the thirst for rapture in a heart of flesh, and works out through the appearance of a soul, by a miraculous birth in plasm and gas, the mystery of God's covenant with the night. Once more was heard in the still cosmic mind the Eternal's promise to his laboring force, inducing the world passion to begin, the cry of birth into mortality, and the opening verse of the tragedy of time. Out of the depths the world's buried secret rose. He read the original ukase kept back in the locked archives of the Spirit's crypt, and saw the signature and fiery seal of wisdom on the dim power's hooded work, who builds in ignorance the steps of light. A sleeping deity opened deathless eyes. He saw the unshaped thought in soulless forms, new matter pregnant with spiritual sense, Mind, dare the study of the unknowable. Life, its gestation of the golden child. In the light flooding thought's blank vacancy, interpreting the universe by soul signs, he read from within the text of the without. The riddle grew plain and lost its catch obscure. A larger luster lit the mighty page. A purpose mingled with the whims of time, a meaning met the stumbling pace of chance, and fate revealed a chain of seeing will. A conscious wideness filled the old dumb space. In the void he saw throned the omniscience supreme. Until next week, I hope we see you then. Namaste, Jai Ma.